Illinois Public Media is at 4:04. I'm Jim Meadows.
This weather forecast is made possible with support from the University of Illinois Employees Credit Union, a full-service financial institution serving campus and community. The University of Illinois Employees Credit Union. More information available online at uiecu.org.
It's 12:38. A slow-moving low-pressure system is moving toward the northeast and into the Great Lakes today. Light rain and drizzle will be possible later today as moisture wraps around the back portion of the system. The wind will shift coming out of the north and temperatures will drop to near freezing. Rain will change to light snow. Light snowfall is possible overnight and into tomorrow morning, mainly across Iowa, northern Illinois, and northern Indiana. High temperatures today will range from the mid-30s across northern Iowa and southern Wisconsin to the low 60s across western Kentucky. Low temperatures tonight will range from mid-20s across northern Iowa to the upper 30s across western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy with a chance of rain and a high near 50. The temperature will hold steady or fall slowly. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain. This evening, then a chance of rain or snow after midnight, the low 32. The wind from the northwest from 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow in the morning and a high of 42. The wind will be from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low of 28 and a west wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, sunny with a high in the low 50s. Friday night and Saturday, mostly cloudy with a low Friday night in the upper 30s and a high Saturday in the upper 40s. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 40s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 30s to the mid 50s. Skies were cloudy with many locations reporting light rain. At Rockford, it was 38 degrees, 42 at O'Hare, Bloomington 45, Springfield 44, Mattoon 48, Carbondale 50. South Bend reported 46 degrees. It was 52 at Lafayette and Terre Haute. Indianapolis reported 50 degrees. Evansville 54. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky at the top of the hour, 48 degrees. The dew point 46. The relative humidity 93%. The wind out of the southwest at 17 miles per hour. And the barometer 29.76 and rising. And at 12:40, 46 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. A report says some groups providing counterterrorism training for law enforcement officers often offer a skewered view of Muslims in America. NPR's Dina Temple-Raston has more.
Lieutenant Colonel Reed Sawyer is a career intelligence officer and runs the Combating Terrorism Center at West Point. This week, at a training center for the New York Fire Department, Sawyer spoke to 40 marshals, chiefs, and firefighters. They're all taking an 11-week terrorism course he's been teaching for the past 7 years.
So the question is, when you're saying your firehouses, how do you make sense of the threat that's before you?
Sawyer has been giving firefighters and beat cops and federal agents counterterrorism training since 1993. He's considered an example of how this sort of training is supposed to work. So Sawyer has been watching with alarm the phenomenon of officials with limited experience who are selling themselves as terrorism instructors.
First is you've got a lot of individuals who are not academically qualified to be instructing in these venues. And more importantly, they speak with a sense of authority, which empowers the audiences with knowledge that isn't necessarily accurate.
One case study, Columbus, Ohio.
My name is Richard Bash. I'm a deputy chief with the Columbus, Ohio Division of Police.
Richard Bash runs the department's Homeland Security Division. And last year, he hired a team, including a retired FBI agent, to help teach his men and other local officials to recognize terrorism. It was supposed to be a 2-day training course.
The class was stopped the second day because what we found was the information being relayed was not accurate.
What kind of stuff were they talking about?
Well, you know, they made some very blanket statements about who might be involved in terrorist activity. These individuals tried to make the other officers attending the class believe that it was a fairly simple profile to follow. And in reality, it's not.
So stereotyping, essentially.
Yes, I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
That's not the sort of information that's going to make our cops and our federal officials smarter on terrorism.
Sam Raskoff is a law professor at New York University. He used to run intelligence analysis at the New York City Police Department.
That's the sort of stuff that's going to paint the wrong kind of picture and, frankly, cause them to go looking in the wrong places for the wrong sorts of things.
And that was exactly why Chief Bash stopped that training session in Columbus. There's a new report out today that tracks this problem in other places. It's from a group in Boston called Political Research Associates, and it looks at independent companies that provide counterterrorism training. It claims to have found stereotyping of Muslims in those cases, too. And in the examples they looked at, they claim taxpayers paid for this training, possibly through grants from the Department of Homeland Security.
It has been a real challenge to link DHS grant money to these trainings.
That's Tom Sincotta, the author of the report.
We know that taxpayer money is facilitating attendance at these conferences. For instance, we will see municipalities cutting checks for, say, $1,100 for, you know, one officer to attend a conference or seminar.
One of the reasons this low-quality training is a concern now is because going forward, local cops are going to be taking a bigger role in the fight against terrorism. The Department of Justice has a new initiative that will take local tips and feed them into a broader database. The idea is to give law enforcement a more systematic way to follow up on new terrorism leads. So good local training, devoid of stereotypes, is vital to that. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR News.
In the European Union, women will no longer pay less for car insurance. The EU's highest court has ruled that charging men and women different premiums is gender discrimination. Terry Schultz reports.
Young female drivers in Europe may not have felt discriminated against when insurance companies checked out their figures, figures showing they're less likely than male counterparts to get in a traffic accident. Nor have men been complaining that their pension payouts are higher than women's because statistically they don't live as long. Insurance companies got exempted from an EU directive that mandated men and women must have equal access to goods and services. But after a challenge from a Belgian consumer group, the European Court of Justice decided to throw out the exemption. Auto insurers warn the change coming next year could drive up women's premiums by 25%. Men's pension contributions will likely rise too. But the European Women's Lobby and EU Justice Commissioner Viviane Reding praise the ruling.
This is an important step towards putting the fundamental right of gender equality into practice.
Conservative European parliamentarian Sayad Karim calls it a setback for common sense, utter madness. Insurance companies are mad, all right, as in angry, insisting it's bad for them and customers to revamp the way premiums are calculated. Malcolm Tarling of the Association of British Insurers says charging men and women differently isn't bias, it's business.
Insurers don't discriminate on the basis of someone's gender. They assess the risk, taking into account lots of different factors that are relevant to whether or not that risk is going to happen.
After years of lobbying against such a change, the insurance companies now have no recourse. The ruling cannot be appealed. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
This month, five performers will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's an eclectic group ranging from pop diva Darlene Love to shock rocker Alice Cooper. In spite of their differences, each adopted a special identity or image that lets them stand out. David C. Barnett has the story of one of the members of this group, Dr. John.
The recording studio was crammed with musicians, some of the best players in Los Angeles, gathered to provide a wall of sound behind Sonny and Cher.
Little man, when you stand by my side, then I know I don't have to hide from anyone.
Behind the tall woman and the little man were multiple guitarists, horns, and keyboard players. Among that last group was a 26-year-old pianist from New Orleans named Mac Rebenek, and he was not too happy with the assignment.
To get all these keyboard players, and they're all good players, playing blink-oom, 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 blink-oom arpeggios together, it's not very hip. and it's not very funky. It doesn't make me want to dance.
And Mac Rebenek knew funky. He had studied at the feet of New Orleans legends like Professor Longhair. But Rebenek had been busted for drugs one too many times, and the authorities refused to let him return home after rehab. So he went to L.A., where there was plenty of mind-numbing session work. To escape, he started thinking back to New Orleans and a story he had heard about a 19th-century medicine man revered by the poor and feared by the well-to-do. His name was said to be John Montaigne, more commonly known as Dr. John.
They call me Dr. John, known as a night tripper, with a saddle of gris in my hand.
In 1969, Mac Rebenek released a thematic album called Grigri, based on the Dr. John character. The record was a mixture of rhythm and blues, jazz, and voodoo chants in a Creole dialect. It was recorded quickly by a group of expatriate New Orleans musicians during leftover Sonny and Cher studio time. For Rebenek, the hardest part was stepping out in front to do the lead vocals.
See, I don't know nothing about singing. I never wanted to be a front man. Front men had big egos and was crazy and aggravating. I just never thought that was a good idea.
But no one else wanted to do it either, so Rebenek reluctantly became Dr. John.
Walk on pins and needles, see what they can do. Walk on gilded splinters with the cane of the Zulu. Sang a man a
When he started touring, friends from New Orleans' Mardi Gras Indians provided him with elaborate costumes, festooned with feathers and intricate beadwork. Rebenek says his goal was to preserve and promote a cultural legacy that was dying off. But the mysterious music of Dr. John connected with psychedelic rockers.
We got some gigs playing at a Love Inn or a Bee Inn or some kind of inn.
Did I put up?
Since then, Dr. John's wardrobe has been scaled back to a snake-headed walking stick and some voodoo beads. And the music is straight-up funky New Orleans. But he's kept the name that he took from that ancient medicine man.
Listen, Doc has been my name all my life, and John is my middle name. I'm proud of all of my names. Malcolm John, Michael Crow Rabinet, and Junior. Add that to it.
And the formerly reluctant lead vocalist has settled into his role as Dr. John.
Yes, that's the